Dr. Lonnie Johnson has joined us in conversation. Bill Russell, I'm Paula Gordon. Please give us a quick overview of these things that it's been tough to get people to see, and then we'll talk about how you funded it. But first, I want to get a picture of what the current work is that you're so committed to.
Well, I'm working on advanced energy technology, which turns out to be very timely right now. It turns out I've been working on this technology for over, now that I think about it, it's been a very long time. I say well in excess of 20 years, but more recently in the CAT class of technologies that I'm focused on right now, the battery work started about 12 years ago. The more advanced battery started another about 8 years ago. So there are two different battery technologies, mm-hmm. one a little bit more older and more mature than the other. And then there's the energy conversion technology for that converts heat directly into electricity. And that one would be applicable to solar energy as well as any other heat source, waste heat from industrial processes, geothermal heat, wherever there is a heat source, this technology could be useful.
These are all pretty radical leaps from where we are just sort of in the regular marketplace to where you can take us, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very radical and
but radical in the good sense.
Oh, in the good sense, that's right.
Well, unless you happen to be Exxon.
Oh, dear.
I mean, there's a political piece to this.
Well, for example, the engine, it offers higher conversion efficiency than any other engine that's been built before. My engine, it converts heat, as I indicated, directly to electricity.
Now, when I hear engine, I hear clunkity-clunkity-clunkity-clunk, and it's the big thing, and right. You got to have something to make it fire, and. So engine, to me, is a word that speaks to an old way of thinking. Using it in the big science sense, aren't you?
Well, yeah, yes, I am, in a technical sense, in the sense that engines, thermodynamic engines work, usually there's a working fluid, a gas, that you compress at low temperature, you heat it up and expand at high temperature. Your car engine works that way. You pull in ambient air, compress it, you inject fuel, heat it up to high temperature, and expand that gas at high temperature. You get more work out during the expansion than it takes to compress it. And so that excess work is what you use to turn the wheels on your car, or you can turn a generator to produce electricity, and even the generator itself is a mechanical device where you have a shaft and you're turning rotating shaft in a magnetic field.
So these are all engine.
Energy is a way of converting, an engine is a way of converting energy to work.
Right, heat energy generally. So internal combustion engine, you burn the fuel to get the heat. If you want to burn a fuel and supply it to my engine, you could indeed do that. You could burn the fuel, supply the heat to this engine, and this engine would give you electricity directly.
But
it has no moving mechanical parts.
Which is a tremendous departure from what I think of as engine.
Yeah, it's a huge step forward. It does operate on a thermodynamic cycle. It uses hydrogen as a working fluid. It compresses hydrogen at low temperature and heats it up at high temperature, and you do the high temperature expansion. So in that sense, it's a traditional thermodynamic cycle, but it works on what's called an Erickson thermodynamic cycle, mm-hmm. which is equivalent to Carnot. So in the ideal sense, the efficiencies would be very high. Obviously, in the real world, there would be friction and some losses, but because this has no moving mechanical parts, those losses will be much less than what we normally would see.
Well, I think of that. There's the classic perpetual motion machine that for years somebody would come up with a perpetual
motion. Well, perpetual motion means that you're not supplying a source of energy. The source of energy in this case is heat. So we are supplying heat in and we get electricity out.
Right.
If you had a perpetual motion machine, well, a perpetual motion machine is any machine that would just turn and run forever without anything coming in. Even if you could get one to work without taking anything out,
that's
an accomplishment.
It's taking it out. And, of course, the inefficiencies, the friction, and all the other things.
Yeah, so
I bring that up because the no moving parts.
Yeah.
Right.
Of this is a very, very important piece.
It is an intriguing technology.
Well,
it's one that I've run into a lot of skeptics, and fortunately, I've had my own resources and I've been able to move it forward.
Okay, let's fess up. Talk about the resources. We'll get it out of the way. You made a lot of money with something quite improbable that may even surprise people sitting listening to the scientist. What did you do?
I invented the Super Soaker water gun.
Super Soaker is something that an awful lot of people with kids and a lot of people who don't have kids.
That's right.
Know a lot about.
I feel the ideal toy is one that the adults want to play with as well as the kids.
And then they did, which has made it possible then. Because what you're talking about, none of this stuff is trivial. All of it's hard, and all of it costs a lot of money to fool around with, doesn't it?
That's correct. Absolutely.
So, thank you, Super Soaker. Which takes us, as I listen to the two of you using what are, for me, right at the edge of understandable words, you're talking about a revolution in an awful lot of realms when you're talking about an engine with no movable parts, radically advanced battery technologies.
Yeah, the battery... This is lithium air battery technology. We've had a lot of people now have come out recently, large companies. IBM, for example, has made public announcements that of its of a technology initiative to bring lithium air battery technology to fruition.
But they're trailing you.
Yeah, they announced this maybe a year and a half ago, something like that.
Which would be around 2009 or 2010?
Yeah, 2009.
And you have working, not even prototypes, you have things out in the field that are being used.
Not in the field. No, we don't have anything in the field. We have working cells in the laboratory where we're cycling them, charging them, and discharging them. But more important than that, we're developing the other enabling technologies that will allow us to put these cells in the field.
So you can't just walk out and plug something in. You got to do a lot of stuff that goes with it.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of components. We've had to develop new materials that didn't exist before.
Materials.
Right. Materials that had certain, like a glass electrolyte, for example, a solid glass material that can be applied cheaply and easily to coat. A separator so that we can use that glass to protect lithium, but yet the lithium ions can be conducted through it so that they can then react with oxygen on the other side.
Now, I'm going to feel more comfortable when you tell me that all these things are patented and we can talk about it.
Yeah, we have patent applications pending on some of them. Some of them we have patents actually issued, and we have other patents that are in draft, and I will steer away from those.
No, please. I don't want to get in trouble.
I want to be able to share this with somebody else.
Well, all of these things are important because you are, and we talk about people at the leading edge, you're at the cutting, bleeding edge, aren't you, with a lot of these things?
Well, you know, the car, for example, the battery. The reason people are now interested in lithium air batteries, which is this technology I'm talking about, is that they're starting now to realize that lithium-ion batteries have limitations that will be a real challenge for the auto industry to make electric vehicles possible. And whereas the industry is struggling to get to 100 miles on a single charge, this technology will allow you to go up to 1,000 miles on a single charge.
Wow.
The same weight equivalent battery. So the implications are very, very profound.
Talk a little bit about those challenges, because I don't think that's familiar to most people. The challenges in the existing battery technology.
Okay, sure. The first challenge is cost. Lithium-ion batteries are expensive for the amount of energy you're able to store in them.
The current ones?
The current ones. Mm-hmm. For example, the battery for the Prius or Toyota Prius is about $10,000.
Yes, I know.
And it's worth it.
Mixed.
Imagine that battery costing $1,000 mm-hmm. to get you the same range. So that would be a very attractive and enabling thing that would allow other people and more people to afford electric cars. So when you look at the projections right now for the adoption of electric cars, and people talk about how many cars will be on the road by 2020 time frame and so forth, well, those projections are based on existing technology, and they'll make some improvements and estimates based on anticipated improvements. But those analyses generally don't account for a radical or paradigm shift in the technology.
What kind of shift?
Paradigm.
And what you're talking about is you're talking about lithium air as opposed to lithium
ion. Correct.
And what is it that makes the air piece so much more appealing than the ion piece?
Well, the expensive component in lithium battery, lithium ion battery, is the cathode material. It's a metal oxide. The most popular one right now is a lithium cobalt oxide, which is cobalt, and that has its own issues. There are cheaper materials, manganese, which is more friendly to the environment and more available. But even then, these metal oxides are heavy and they're expensive, and incorporating them in the battery has burdens associated with that. And the other one issue is the weight of the battery. Once you get it and you construct it, you're at about 200 watt-hours per kilogram of battery weight. So when you put this in your car to store enough energy in the battery, that means you've got a heavy battery.
Which means you're spending a lot of the energy
moving the battery around,
which means it's effectively lost energy.
Right.
This is not a good thing.
And so, as you try to get a bigger battery in your car so you can drive further, it costs you a lot more money. But now you've got a bigger and heavier battery, and so you reach diminishing returns. Your range increase starts to taper off.
Mm-hmm. However, when we come back, we will talk about the good lithium battery that uses air, not ions, or something like that. Be with us. We'll return, and he'll explain it to me.